And Hornaday joins us now on WGN Radio, movie critic for the Washington Post. Hi, Ann. Thanks for giving us some of your time today. How are you?
I'm great, John. Thank you. Thanks so much.
By the way, do you watch movies in theaters?
I do. And I was just in a theater last night, as a matter of fact. Yep, they're back. Those in-person screenings are back.
What's your experience been? How well attended are those these days? And what's the compliance like? And what are the rules in Washington?
Well, weirdly enough, I actually live in Baltimore. So that's kind of where I do most of my viewing. And you caught me a little flat-footed on the actual, I think the mask mandate has been lifted in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess, my point is just what do you see in the theaters, I guess, basically.
Right. Masks. I usually attend press screenings, and so we, as a matter of sort of collegiality and professional courtesy, we are all masking when we're in these theaters together and trying to social distance as much as possible.
Yeah.
And then there are those occasions when you find yourself in a screening with people, you know, with the general population. And I think my experience, like I went to go see West Side Story the other night at a lovely screening down in Washington, packed auditorium. Everyone was masked and everyone had to show their vaccination record as they came in. So that was fine with me.
Yeah. I'm on that same page with you. I'm wearing the mask. I'm as compliant as the next guy, although I have found one hack. I go to college basketball games here in Chicago. I went to the DePaul game. I went to the Loyola game the other night, and I order popcorn, and then they let you take your mask off when you're eating popcorn. It's the same on airplanes. So if you eat the popcorn slowly enough, you can legally watch the game. And I suppose you could do that in a movie theater, too. I'm not recommending that, of course.
But then you get thirsty, so then you get the double time, because then you have to drink all that water after eating all that popcorn so slowly.
And then I'll have to get up in the middle of a dance scene.
Okay.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the movies, which you kindly enough told my producer, okay, here's some indies worth noting, here's some others of interest, and here's the big movies this Christmas we should see. What are your big three this year?
Well, like I said, I just saw West Side Story, and, you know, I don't know about you and your listeners, but my family has sort of gotten into a ritual where on Christmas Day, we will often go see a movie, and that is usually the kind of movie that will appeal to my 92-year-old father, my young adult daughter, my husband, and myself, and so I'm always on the lookout for those all-rounders, you know, just those really good, multi-generational, just flat-out entertaining movies, and I think West Side Story fits that bill on every count. I mean, it's Steven Spielberg's long-awaited revival of the classic 1961 movie musical. It is absolutely so beautifully staged and beautifully shot. It's just a treat for the eyes, and of course, you still have that classic Leonard Bernstein music and the lyrics by the recently departed Stephen Sondheim and the great Jerome Robbins choreography, all beautifully executed by a terrific cast. You know, the leads, Ansel Elgort and Rachel Zegler, are good. They're very good. And he's got that classic 50s screen idol look. But to me, the standouts in this movie were the supporting players, especially a guy that I had never heard of before named Mike Faist, who plays Riff, the leader of the Jets gang, and he just blew my mind. He was so good. I think people will really, this is the kind of one that I'm always looking, like I said, I'm looking for those movies I can send people to without hesitation or any caveats. And I think for my money, that's the one that I'll be recommending to most people this year.
I'm really glad to hear you say all of that. I'm interested in your take on The Matrix. I guess we'll ask you about Spider-Man, too. I don't go to those movies, but fill us in. And then some of the indies are kind of intriguing, too. Licorice Pizza is on your radar. Let's pick it up here in just a quick minute on WGN. Movies that are coming out this holiday season. Yeah, you can watch them, I guess, in person in the theaters, maybe at your own home as well. And our guest says the West Side Story is an obvious, easy choice for the whole family. Ann Hornaday from the Washington Post. One last question about that movie, Ann. Were there any twists? Is it, in fact, true to the original?
wanted to mention Ariana DeBose, who you heard very briefly there, plays Anita. She was another standout. Yes, it's really a revival. This isn't Spielberg does not take any big departures from the narrative that we all know. Tony Kushner, who wrote the screenplay, has updated the references in a way to kind of handle a lot of the material that the audiences have found offensive over the years. Mm-hmm. A lot of the dialogue on the part of the Puerto Rican characters is in Spanish with no subtitles, which I happened to watch it with a largely Latino audience, Spanish-speaking audience, and they were delighted by it. You know, it just adds another layer of authenticity and realism, and it's certainly, you know, everyone kind of can understand what they're talking about. There's no loss of comprehension there. It just adds another really lovely layer, I thought, to the proceedings.
How'd you like Spider-Man?
Haven't seen it yet. Now that one, Spider-Man: No Way Home and Matrix Resurrections, are two really highly anticipated bigger titles coming out at the holidays that I know everyone. Spider-Man is already breaking records. I think it was like the most watched trailer.
Yeah, yeah.
It broke those records. It's breaking pre-sales records. And so Tom Holland is so charming. I just think he's done such a terrific job with that character. And I'm one of those people that I'm getting a little fatigued with all these reboots and remakes and sequels and blah, blah, blah. But I cannot deny that he's made a very, very appealing character, and he's got terrific chemistry with Zendaya, and they're both so gifted. So I'm actually looking forward to this one.
I am amazed at the appetite for these comic movies,
yeah,
though, because I never got on that bus anyway. And I thought, okay,
yeah,
they'll have their day, and then we'll go back to making normal movies. But we really haven't, have we?
No, and I'm with you. Like I'm ready for this. And one of the kinds of movies that these kinds of movies have sort of overtaken are those one-off family films, you know, that it sounds like you and I probably kind of grew up with or came of age with, you know, just those good general audience entertaining. They don't necessarily launch a franchise. They're just excellent movies. And one of my favorite movies of this past year was a movie called The Waterman that is on Netflix. It was directed by the actor David Oyelowo. And it harkens back to those movies like Hold and Stand By Me and those early Spielberg Amblin movies that are wholesome, but they're not smarmy. And they do appeal to a multi-generational household. And I just would love to see those come back. But I think that space has really been taken up with these comic book movies. That's what families go see together now.
Yeah. I wonder if House of Gucci will fall into that category.
That is a ride. I have to tell you, I don't even know what to say about House of Gucci. That was, disgust.
Wait a minute, but it doesn't have to be true. I know that the House of Gucci's taken some offense to the portrayal of the patriarch, etc. I don't really care. I mean, sometimes I do when there are people I care about. I'm not worried about it. I'll just go watch it to see Lady Gaga and the rest of them.
Well, I'll tell you something right now, John. Yes, she can hold a scene like no other. Adam Driver, so good. But I believe the takeaway from this is Jared Leto and Al Pacino, who are doing, they're in a completely different movie, and they are just a meme machine. I mean, there are scenes between them and with them that are so over the top and so campy and so kind of, I think, inadvertently funny. I don't know. Maybe it was meant to be, but it's a crazy, crazy movie.
Well, is it fun? Like, I mean, I'm trying to read you here. Should I go see it?
I wouldn't. You know, listen. I did not find it all that much fun. First of all, it's like every other movie I'm seeing this season. It's really way too long. What is with these 2.5 hour movies? People, come on, hour and 40 minutes. Hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, well, I feel the same way about Broadway shows too. I think they could clock those in at 2 hours and not 2:15, 2:20.
And I wonder too if filmmakers are taking their cues from these streaming series and these binge, and they think that they have to do that too. It's like, no, you're a movie. Act like a movie. Don't act like a series. You don't have to do that. You know, do your own thing.
Yeah, I wonder if that's
because it really is getting. It's getting to be a really big. So yeah, I did find it. I found it a little over long. I actually didn't find the story all that. I'm back at House of Gucci now. I didn't find the story all that compelling. Now, anybody who's watching Succession, you're watching that story. You know, you're already watching that story. So I honestly didn't think it was I wouldn't consider it must see movie.
Well, despite my best intentions, I like House or Succession. I'm watching that, and there's not a likable person in there. There's nothing redeemable almost about any of them.
I know.
Maybe I'm rooting for Shiv. I don't know, but
I change every episode. Cousin Greg, I don't know. His lawyer, I just don't even know anymore.
Cousin Greg, at
I'm
least.
Rooting for the composer. I root for Nicholas Britell, whose music for that show is another character. It's so brilliant. And I think I come back for that as much as anything else. It's just everything about it is so delicious.
Let's talk about some of these other movies of interest. Don't Look Up, Being the Ricardos, and The Tender Bar. What should I know about those?
Well, Don't Look Up is it sounds strange on paper, but it's a climate change satire. So that already gets my attention. It's by Adam McKay, of course, who collaborated first so fruitfully with Will Ferrell for many years, and then branched into directing. He did The Big Short and Vice, and so he's really interested in these sort of fact-based, serious-minded subjects that he's doing in a stylistically different way. And so here he's tackling this as a comedy with Leonardo DiCaprio and Jennifer Lawrence and Meryl Streep as the president of the United States. Now, again, this one I haven't had a chance to see yet, but all of those elements intrigue me. Being the Ricardos, another intriguing team of Aaron Sorkin writing and directing, and it's about Desi Arnaz and Lucille Ball, played by Javier Bardem and Nicole Kidman. So another intriguing mashup there. And The Tender Bar is the adaptation of J.R. Moringer's memoir, directed by George Clooney. And I have seen this one, with a really lovely performance by Ben Affleck, who plays this beloved uncle of a little boy coming of age with his single mom. And, you know, Ben Affleck, he's become kind of more of a tabloid figure in recent years, especially lately with his relationship. But he delivered a really terrific performance last year in a little movie called The Way Back, where he played a basketball coach who's recovering from some issues and finding a way back. Just a really terrific, understated performance, and this is a similar turn from him. So, for those of us rooting for Ben Affleck, they might want to check this one out.
It's hard to do that sometimes because of his personal story that you know, but I think when I see him in a movie, I think he's more than a solid actor. I think he's usually pretty terrific, even if he makes some choice, forget about the tabloids. I wanted to ask you about Licorice Pizza. Have you seen that?
Yes, and this is a hotly anticipated movie for fans of Paul Thomas Anderson. Of course, he did Boogie Nights and Magnolia, and more recently The Master and Phantom Thread. And this is, PTA, as his fans love to call him, grew up in the San Fernando Valley. The San Fernando Valley of Los Angeles is his place, and he's kind of it's like Italy for Fellini. He just goes back and back and back and mines his memories of that community and growing up there in the 70s and 80s. And this is another exercise in that, and it stars Cooper Hoffman, who's the son of the late Philip Seymour Hoffman, of course, who was a frequent collaborator of Anderson's, and then the musician Alana Haim, who's a member of the sister group Haim. And it's just this, it's got kind of a loose knockabout energy. It's Cooper Hoffman plays a child actor who's starting to age out of the youthful roles, and he's looking for kind of another path in life. Alana Haim plays a 20-something young woman who's similarly a little bit at odds and ends and sixes and sevens, and they kind of come together in a relationship that sort of straddles romance and friendship, and you're not quite sure what it is. They're not quite sure what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I found the movie's a little bit digressive. I could have used a little more structure. There are these weird kind of side episodes featuring Sean Penn as kind of a William Holden character and Bradley Cooper as the producer John Peters. I was less charmed by those. There's a few scenes that I was actually really kind of put off by, but there is just this kind of endearing emotional tone to it that if you go with it and you feel like going with it, it's kind of a lovely little time and place.
We're talking about Licorice Pizza, which opens on Christmas Day, Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Phantom Thread. That's why I think I would take a chance on this.
Yeah.
Coen brothers, did they write The Tragedy of Macbeth?
Actually, this is a Joel Coen production. Ethan Coen was not involved with this one. So this is Joel Coen directing Macbeth with Denzel Washington in the title role and Frances McDormand as Lady Macbeth. And it's really an interesting production, very stylized. He filmed it in black and white, a very kind of spare, Spartan, almost brutalist production design, so that it, your attention is just absolutely solely on these performances, and they're both terrific.
I'm out of time, Ann. You and I haven't visited on the radio before, but we should do this more often. It's been delightful talking to you today.
I'd love it. I would love it. Thank you so much for inviting me, John.
Ann Hornaday is the movie critic at The Washington Post.